I don't think you can underplay the open heart, open home dynamic. And if a pastor models that well, lots of new people, people coming into his house all the time, huge amount of ministries done like that, huge amount of relational connectivities done like that. You get to know somebody so much better around a meal table, and they see you model what a Christian family looks like.
Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC. And with me today is our Church Leadership Consultant, Ray Evans. Hello, Ray.
Hi.
Not just Church Leadership Consultant, 40 years Grace Community Church in Bedford, coming up on retirement, I think, at the end of December.
Yes.
Excellent. Now, Ray, we want to start a conversation today about something that is a subset of church leadership, but perhaps isn't the thing that is in the forefront of people's minds when they think about ministry. And that is where the pastor lives, what we might call the manse or housing for pastors generally. And we just really want to start a conversation, getting churches to think about that a little bit more, particularly in the context where house prices are running away. There are some areas of the country which are basically unaffordable unless you've got a huge amount of equity behind you. And let's start, if I may, with you personally. Did you have a manse when you were serving at Grace Community Church?
No, we didn't. The church was a small church plant in 1972, just 12 people. Mm-hmm. The pastor who pioneered the church had been in a manse, but when he left the church he was serving, he didn't have a manse. We didn't have a manse we owned. Now, we had a member early on in the church who just said, well, why don't we pay our pastor a wage so he could buy his own house? Now, back in the early 70s, you could get a mortgage and buy a house on one income. So that's what we did. So when I was appointed, I came into a situation where the church basically paid me and enabled me to buy my own home or begin to buy my own home. And we tell our children, our first mortgage was at 17.5%.
Wow.
And it went up to 21% interest. And it was tough on one income. But we were enabled to get our own home. So our church has never been in a manse situation. We paid our pastors so they can get their own mortgage. But over time, I've recognized for younger pastors, what was possible for me 40 years ago is becoming increasingly difficult now. What's happened, I think we just need to see this as big cultural changes. Mm. One was the Thatcher Revolution, as it were, where lots and lots of people became homeowners. It used to be a lot of people rented. My dad was in the Air Force. We, in effect, rented a married quarter. My granddad was in a council house. My other granddad was in a miner's cottage. They were all, that was normal. Mm. So for a pastor to be in a rented home, there was nothing extra special. Perhaps the challenge was at the end, retirement, where would he live? But he'd probably go and find another place to rent. And that was normal. Mm. But the Thatcher Revolution changed massively that outlook. More and more people who had been renters were able to become owners. And so Britain became a widespread property ownership. And many churches in the 80s thought, well, why should our pastor not be able to own his own home? And it certainly also will solve the problem what happens when he comes to retirement. And I watched many churches sell their manses and use the money to help a pastor buy his own home. And to start with, that was great, for the next 20-odd years. Mm. Many churches said, well, we no longer own a manse. Perhaps the manse wasn't perhaps that suitable anyway. Many manses built in the late Victorian period by the 1980s were aged. They needed a lot of money spent on them.
The domination of church meetings with what's wrong with the manse this time kind of thing was the narrative.
So selling the manse is enabling a pastor to buy his own home. But as house prices have gradually risen, what's happened over the last, not only the Thatcher Revolution, we've also seen house prices have continued to rise, primarily because most mortgages are now on two incomes, with a huge return to the workplace of many wives. Then the recognition of, we could get a bigger mortgage. In effect, house prices have continued to rise. So now we've got southeast of England, extremely expensive place. And I've watched what was possible for me to buy a house in Bedford is now will be quite difficult for a young couple starting out. We've had some young pastors come to us. Some of them owned a little house somewhere else and then sold it and were able to buy using that the equity. But we've also recognized that some of our younger workers are coming to us and they don't have anything to sell, and to get on the property market is now very, very difficult. Mm. So I've watched this happen where I am, and I've begun to see it all over the country. Churches saying, we could afford a pastor, but he won't be able to afford to live anywhere near where we are. But also what's exacerbated that problem is that renting is now extremely expensive. Yeah. Whereas there were lots of affordable rents, unaffordable mortgages, but affordable rents. Rents are often now as much as mortgages are. Mm. So churches-
Often more, actually.
And often more, yeah. My daughter bought a house, and when she was renting for a short time, it was cheaper to have a mortgage than a rent. Yep. So churches are in this situation where paying a pastor enough to buy his own home or rent is really difficult. And it's becoming a widespread concern. Some churches may be even worried about hiring a young pastor who has not got equity. Because like, how can we afford to house him?
So he can't live in this community effectively.
Yeah. Can't move here. And that seems a tragedy. So money's tight. Money's always tight. You know, 1 Timothy 5 tells us in the early church, money was tight. How do you look after this scarce resource? And particularly waking up to the responsibility churches have of supporting their pastors, not just paying him a wage to live on, but how is he going to have a house, a roof over his head?
This is a really important question, isn't it, in terms of church planting and where churches are in their communities. So for example, if you were doing secular work, you would move to the place you could afford to live in. Yeah. Whereas actually, if you have a role in a church, a paid role, it stands to reason that you would want to be in that community, I guess. So how can churches begin to think about, I mean, I don't think we've got all the solutions, have we? But how can churches begin to think about this?
Yeah, beginning the conversation is really important. Waking up to the changing economic, social, housing circumstances we're in, really important. You're right to say for many jobs, if you can't afford to live, you commute. Mm. I did come across a pastor who commuted 20 miles to his church.
Is that? I mean, let's just push on that for a minute. Is that a good? Is that help? Can that ever be a helpful thing?
No, it's really unhelpful. It may be like an evil necessity, if you like, but it's not ideal. No, if you want a church, is a gathering. It's a local church. It's a gathering of people in an area. Now, some of them may commute, but for a pastor, he wants to be accessible to people. It's not just, can I go and see people? Can they come and see me? And if you live, you know, 40 minutes commute away, which would be perfectly okay for a secular job, but for a pastor in a church in a community, it's a real, almost a disaster.
But there's some places that could work, though. Surely if you're in a city and the church is in a city centre and there isn't a lot of residents around you and people do live in the suburbs and they all come into the city, that is probably a model that would work, but it's probably not the norm.
No, that's not the norm. Yeah, it certainly could work. So this is where geography is not simplistic. You've got to be wise up to your own local circumstances. And you may find that it's perfectly acceptable to have that model. But I think you need to think through the intended and unintended consequences of that. One area that I think is really important, that why I would say, if possible, locate near where people live, is simply this. If you look at why and how do churches grow, well, a friend of mine put it like this, said you need quality welcome, quality teaching, and quality hospitality. Churches need to be places where people really give a warm welcome and genuinely welcomed and glad that you're here, that kind of thing. Good teaching. But he put his finger on this third element, quality hospitality. Now, unfortunately, the word hospitality now has a kind of corporate feel to it, doesn't it? You know, the box at Twickenham or something like that. But hospitality in the Bible means sharing a meal with a cup of cold water. And all the evidence shows and all the anecdotes show that where church pastors, church leaders, where they have new people into their home, that gives those new people a far greater opportunity to connect to the church than almost anything else you can do. Back in the day, Jenny and I would bias towards new people, visitors, seekers especially, and not only meet them, as it were, formally at church, but informally invite them back into our home, getting to know them, running courses in our homes, but not just that side, but just having them around for meals. Having a meal with somebody is a massive big deal. Tim Chester's written a brilliant book on this. I don't think you can underplay the open heart, open home dynamic. And if a pastor models that well, lots of new people coming into his house all the time, huge amount of ministries done like that, huge amount of relational connectivities done like that, you get to know somebody so much better around a meal table. And they see you model what a Christian family looks like. They see that you're human. They see that your kids are like everybody else's kids. They see what it is to help your wife and she help you run the home. And people love coming into a pastor's house. So if you want your church to grow, one of the most important things a pastor does is use his home. It's a tool of the trade, if I can put it like that. There's a strong argument for a church to say, try and get your pastor to have the biggest living room and good kitchen that he can have, because they will enable him to do his job. You provide him with a book and a phone, maybe a laptop. You'll pay for him to go to conferences. Have you ever thought about trying to help him buy a slightly bigger home than most people would have? Because his home is a tool of the trade.
It's really interesting you say that. My brother's an Anglican rector, so he obviously has a manse with his stipend in his role. But he always says to me, that the manse is an extension of the church.
Yeah.
So that's the principle that churches should think about, would you say?
Yeah, I think it is. I think if you see the home is not just where he lives, but where he ministers, and therefore trying to make it a home where people can feel welcomed. He's not under pressure, tiny little kitchen. No resources to have people round. We're not saying he's a hotel where people come and stay all the time. It's not so much that, but more a living space where you can have people round.
This is where ministry is done sometimes.
It's where it's made all the time. And it's not necessarily formal ministry. It's that chatting over things. We had four little children, so family of six. As soon as you have somebody in, if you have another family of four, 12 of you, 12 of you. How many of us have got a front room or a dining room where we can have 12 people around the table? But the amount of good that was done, almost incalculable. And we loved having people around. And I hope and I trust that people loved coming around, built lots of relationships that way. So that's an important aspect. Now, historically, Anglican churches in particular, and quite a few free churches recognized that. Often manses were next door.
Yes.
And they were often kind of substantial buildings. They weren't just the two up, two down. My granddad was a miner, had 15 kids in a two up, two down miner's house. Wow. Now you don't want to put a pastor under that kind of pressure. There are some pastors with big families who are under that kind of pressure, and churches haven't really thought about that. But if you historically that's what we got, but then we sold our manses, Or we enabled a pastor to buy a sort of very modest little house, and in effect, we've cramped his ministry. So we're in a position now where churches are having to think through all over again, should we be buying a manse? What kind of property should it be? Where could it be located? Could we set up a fund? I think one of the things we can envision people with is not only were we the first widespread property-owning generation, we're now passing on our properties. The baby boomer generation, my generation, is inheriting the wealth of their parents.
Yep.
And some of us are also passing that wealth on in terms of property. People in their 80s and 90s are passing their property. They once would have only perhaps had enough money for their funeral and a few mementos. Now, they bought a house in Thatcher's time for $5,000. They've sold it for $500,000. They're passing on. Baby boomers are inheriting wealth and now beginning to pass on that wealth. Could we not envision my generation say, what about leaving a legacy, not just for the church's building fund, but for a fund that can house workers? Because that is going to become a massive pressure point. For some churches, the pressure point is not their senior pastor. It may be your apprentices. How are you going to house your apprentices?
Or even assistant pastors.
Assistant pastors.
Because you can't have multiple manses, or can you? What does it need to look like?
It could get very expensive. But some kind of vision of, wouldn't it be wise to say buy a house, which a series of assistant pastors, you know, in the Anglican Church, again, curates come and go. More and more free churches have an assistant pastor maybe for 2 or 3 years. Well, it makes not much sense for him to buy a house for that amount of time, the hassle involved, the cost involved. Mm. But if you had a house that you could say, look, we own a property, come and stay in our assistant pastor manse, even if your senior pastor's got his own home, makes a lot of sense. I think churches all around the country need to be thinking about how we're going to fund this. Now, the good news is other people are thinking about this.
Yeah.
And I think a very important conversation going forward will be getting some of the generous donors to Christian ministry to envision them not just to support people in terms of funding someone on a training scheme, but helping churches acquire property that enable ministry to happen. Churches in hard places, churches in expensive places are not going to be able to do this just on their own. Mm. And the thought of organizations that marshal funds for Christian ministry beginning to get a vision for this, that's a conversation that is beginning to happen. I think it's going to be really, really important. So not only churches acquiring property in which the church meets, but churches beginning to fund property in which their workers can live. Mm. It's going to be a conversation going forward.
I think one of the pushbacks that in churches that leaders will face, and I've heard this in other contexts, is should the pastor get kind of favorable treatment to other kind of members of the church? And what I mean by that is, oh, the pastor gets a sabbatical and it's fully paid. I'd never get that from my job. Or he's got a bigger house than my family can afford, yet he's just a servant in the church. Those kind of criticisms, how do churches kind of push back and manage that? Because I agree with everything you've said, extension of the church, where ministry is done, that informal conversations, that this is not insignificant. So how do we manage that kind of feeling that, oh, the pastor's getting something that other members of the church are not getting in the same way or don't have the same advantages? How do we manage that?
Yeah, I think two things. One is we do need to teach on it. And significant, that passage where I said money's tight, 1 Timothy 5, Paul does some practical teaching. So he talks about honoring widows. He's talking about paying the money. In a culture it's tight, he said you haven't got endless amount of funds, so you've got to be very careful who you support. So he said, look, the widows who are really in need, there are widows whose families ought to be looking after them. There shouldn't be a burden to the church. There are some widows who haven't got Christians in their families. They're the widows you really care for. Honour them. And then he goes on to say, and double honour your elders. Hmm. You're thinking, whoa. He said, look, your pastors, they will be working hours, crazy hours. They will be having pressures you know nothing about. Even there where there's money tight, you may not be able to double honor all your pastors. And what he says is not spread every elder get a little bit, but he said, look, especially those who preach and teach, you'll have a variety of gifts amongst an eldership. If you've got tight amount of money, rather than give everybody a little, double honor the one who's especially teaching and preaching. So release public ministry gifts and double honor it. That's quite a remarkable thing to say. Sir Fred Cathwood wrote a book, God's Time, God's Money, in which he argued strongly for really supporting, freeing a pastor from financial concerns. He's got not enough other concerns. So we need to teach the church that. There are things in the job. In the olden days, when I was a young boy, pastors weren't so much contracted workers. They were stipendary, non-stipendary. It was a calling. They didn't have a contract because God was their boss and they worked out their own hours. They were answerable to him. That even had a legal standing. Mm. They were regarded for tax purposes different from other workers on the recognition that the money you gave a pastor was to free him to follow his calling. He wasn't subject to European hours legislation. He was free to do what he felt was right before God.
What we might call the office holder rather than
he was an office
worker.
Holder than a contracted worker. Now, that has had to change because of contract law. But the principles there, I know most pastors work crazy hours and because the job requires it. You know, I've had phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning from desperately needy people. I've got to go and visit people in hospital on their deathbed. at any time it takes. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes chewing a talk over, sometimes getting great clarity, sometimes wrestling, you know, awake in the morning for hours and hours, not being able to work it all out. So it's a kind of funny world that we work in. The other side of the story is we also need to teach pastors. We must teach them not to exude a sense of entitlement. We must say, look, you must understand that if you ever give the impression that you're special and you need special treatment and you're quibbling over this, that, and the other, people will feel hurt by that. They're giving generously to support you. It is what you're owed. Paul's very clear about that. The worker is worthy of hire. It isn't a favor they're doing you. But don't take that with a sense of entitlement. It's a twofold thing. Teach churches the importance of being generous, and they won't always understand. And please, you know, giving a pastor a sabbatical is probably giving him opportunity to serve you better. He's working crazy hours. Most pastors I know work way beyond what they're, you know, that they're contracted to do. It's always on your mind. Don't resent him having time to say, go and pick his kids up from school that you've not got, because he's out every evening in a way that you aren't, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then pastors need to, you know, show that they understand that they're not taking this for granted. They're not entitled. If those two things work together, I think there can be a happy marriage between people being generous towards their pastor, but their pastor not flaunting that and not taking it for granted.
Thinking about buildings more generally, sometimes they're a real headache to churches, aren't they? So, you know, churches that have buildings to meet in, often there's problems that need fixing, that kind of thing. If churches go out and start buying manses, are we not just going to exacerbate this problem? And suddenly we've got multiple buildings that need kind of help and support. Is there a better way, or what wisdom would you give to churches thinking about how they manage a manse, if indeed they have one already, or if they're thinking about purchasing one?
Yeah. Massive issue. I mean, the renting out a property now comes with lots of legal obligations, and churches need to face up to that. That if they do go down, that we will own property that we will either give to our pastor as part of his pay package or rent out to him. Then that comes with legal obligations. But that comes now, that's the world in which we live. There are legal obligations on so very many things. And that's why churches do need to invest in the training of people who can administer well. There are safeguarding policies, health and safety, all that. That has to happen in other aspects of church life. The church will just need to face up to that. But it is onerous, because those legal obligations are now quite strict. Mm. That's why some ways paying him to buy his own place is, in a sense, he's a normal homeowner who has to fix his own home like the rest of us.
But you might have to pay him thousands and thousands of pounds.
To do it. Yeah. So it's almost a kind of, you know, you can't win. It is a challenge, that one. But if it's faced up and recognised this is just how it has to be, then you build it in, if you like. You build it into your budget. You build it into your time allocation. You're going to put resources into this. The thing you want to avoid, though, I think, is we own the house, we own you, and we have a say on everything. In the past, one of the problems of manses was that pastors were made to feel that, you know, we decide on the color of the carpet and we have to approve. You want to paint that wall? Well, we need to approve the quality of paint you're buying, because we're paying for it. There became a kind of a sense that pastors felt very, very uncomfortable. And some members could easily, you know, well, you know that horrible joke in the past, Lord, you keep him humble, we'll keep him poor. You know, I met pastors who really, really were on the bad end of that. Sometimes some Christians were very... controlling, and perhaps some Christians, sadly, jealous. You know, he's got something I've not got. We're told love isn't jealous. Love rejoices in the blessings of another. And I think that it comes down to sometimes those common Christian graces. Can we rejoice in the blessing that someone else has, even if it's our pastor who's got a better car than I've got, or a nicer house? Well, thank God that he has, because he will have pressures you know nothing of. So that's a part of a kind of training of Christians in the mindset, but it is a challenge. And that's why this conversation needs to begin to be had more widely, because it's now coming home to bite us. We were able to put it off, I think, to probably 2005, then the crash of 2007, eight, all of a sudden go, oh, there's a real problem here. We've kind of contained it, but it's now coming, because what's happening is my generation of pastors, the baby boomers, are coming to retirement in big numbers. And churches are now having to recruit younger pastors, some of them very young pastors. And they're now beginning to, we haven't had to face this problem for a very long time.
And you've got younger men coming into ministry who simply haven't got the equity behind them to purchase a property. Yeah. And frankly, the church's salary might be very generous, but it's still not going to be enough to purchase a property.
Yeah.
So just on that, how does a pastor start this conversation? Because actually, it's about him and his family, and that can be a little bit embarrassing. What advice would you give to perhaps a younger man who, listening to the podcast, who thinks this is really important, but how do I begin that conversation with my eldership and my church without it sounding like I'm kind of making demands? It sounds important to me, but how do I do that?
Yeah, well, get them to listen to the podcast. But I think it's an important point. I mean, ideally, you want another elder or a deacon to speak up for you. When I took on my job, the pastor who'd been before me, he sat our deacons down and he said to them, if you don't look after Ray, nobody else will. Ray, you've got to be his advocate. You've got to understand part of your role, just as you would care for widows, you've got to care for Ray. And I was very grateful those guys took that on board and they've been very kind to me. But that's part of a diaconate understanding. 1 Timothy 5 is a brilliant passage for this. Who would administer that money? Well, most churches, it would be the financial deacon. It's quite significant that the financial deacon has to care for widows and pastors. And you'd want a deacon to be a generous-hearted, thoughtful, understanding advocate. So if you can get that conversation started by him or an elder speaking up, saying, we need this conversation, that really helps. Because if a pastor has to do it himself, it feels self-serving. All of us find it hard to preach on giving when we're a sole pastor. Because everybody goes, like, you're basically saying you want a pay rise and you want us to give more. So many pastors don't preach on giving.
Yeah.
I found it a lot easier to preach on giving since we've had a staff where I'm not trying to raise my money. I'm just trying to talk about principles. But many soul pastors know it's a really difficult issue. So if you have another pastor, I mean, if you're ever a visiting preacher, why not preach on 1 Timothy 5? Because a pastor finds it very hard to say, double honor me. How can you do that?
But the principle's there.
The principle's there, but it's very hard. Whereas a visiting preacher might be able to say, now, look, here's a principle. How are you working it out in your church? I haven't got a clue. I know that I can tread on toes when I go and visit other churches because they're never going to invite me back. No, I don't. Only joking. But there's a principle there. But if you have someone within your eldership or diaconate, ideally, and say, look, could you start this conversation? It's important. Maybe not for me, but for the next guy. Or if we ever have a trainee or an assistant, we need to think about this now. Could you start that conversation? Because otherwise it makes it feel as if I'm self-serving. And I don't want to ever come over, you know, as if I'm after more. It is a genuine, I think that's a way where to start, really.
I think it's fair to say Ray and I don't have all the answers or perhaps even any brilliant answers to this problem longer term. So do be in touch with us at the FIC. If you think you can help us to think through this, you can help churches to think through this, we'd love to hear from you and start this conversation. Hey, can I mention one ministry I'm involved in before we draw to a conclusion? So I'm on the committee of something called the Evangelical Housing Association. An EHA provides property in retirement to retired FIC, Grace Baptist and EFCC pastors or missionaries. So that means if you are in rented accommodation, perhaps you're in your mid late 50s, you've never thought about where you'll live in retirement, do look up EHA, Evangelical Housing Association, and we can help you buy a property in the area of your choosing, normally a bungalow, and we rent it to you below market rates and you get security of tenure, which is just a great ministry to give some of that double honour. You know, we're blessed with properties around the country, but we will buy a property for a couple or a man or a retired missionary, wherever they would like to, you know, within striking distance of an evangelical church they can retire to and worship in. So that is just something to mention. There are ministries out there, aren't there, that are helping with some of this stuff, and that is what is one of them.
Yeah, and there's an article we hope coming out fairly soon on the FIC website where some of these issues are raised and some of these resources we're going to point people to.
Fantastic. So hopefully we'll be able to begin this conversation, see it move forward and help churches think through how to house pastors, and whether it's a question of manses or salaries, whatever that looks like. We just pray that this would be a good kind of starting point. Ray, thanks very much for chatting this over.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you about it. And this has been Independence, the FIEC podcast. If you've enjoyed it, do rate and review so others can find it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you very much.